We're discussing the rollout of virtual learning on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Wisconsin districts have charted their own course, deciding whether to offer full in-person instruction, stick to 100% remote learning, or go with a hybrid of the two. The Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction, DPI, provided guidance as districts develop these plans. And before we go further, I want to acknowledge that teachers, parents, and for goodness sakes, the kids, they're doing their level best under these circumstances. I bear witness to that. Are you working remotely and juggling your child's schoolwork around your own job? How is that going? Is your child able to work independently in this remote classroom world? Tips, experiences, questions, they're all welcome. 800-642-1234. Janice Mertes is Assistant Director of Teaching and Learning at DPI. Janice, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hello, good morning.
Well, let's get the lay of the land here, first of all. As you survey school districts and learn how they are delivering education this fall, how many of our students are in some kind of virtual setup?
Sure. DPI did an informal survey early August, and recently the Wisconsin State Journal took that data and kind of demonstrated where we thought districts were at with offering some level of face-to-face. And at that point, I think we had 311 indicate there was going to be some face-to-face, could be 5 days a week, could be a hybrid model. As districts rolled out their plans, we also know that they gave students the right to select maybe 100% option. So exactly where students are, we don't know those exact numbers based on local choices, but we do know that there was a variance in what was offered to families and children to start the year.
Okay, so we do know there are thousands of kids, though, who are in some form of a virtual setup during the school week. Is that right?
Correct, yes.
Okay, so, you know, as you look at these setups and these kids who are on these Zoom calls for hours at a time learning literacy and math and science, they may be on these calls for more than 3 hours. There may be a break here and there. How do you expect them to do this and stay focused when the adult people in our world, we can't even focus on a Zoom call for over an hour?
Right. I mean, one of the improvements we feel from last spring is that districts are trying to create a more structured experience for students learning new content, assessing, conferring. So that variance in what students actually may be doing, no two districts are alike. You know, we trust that districts are creating the structure that they feel the students need at the time they need it. We know that there's variance in the week and the schedule as far as there may be some asynchronous blocks of time where students are not in line online, or in fact, their activities assigned to them are not actually using a computer at all. So, you know, we are seeing the variance in that instructional design to achieve those learning targets. So it's hard to assume all students are in a schedule that looks the same.
Right. And so the synchronous time would be when the students are logged on at a specific time of day, like 8:30 in the morning, and working with that live teacher in that virtual setup.
Correct. Yes. Synchronous assumes that there is some type of interaction going on. Could be student-student, could be student-adults. And again, the variance of that time, you know, should be age appropriate as far as online screen time, but then also, you know, to achieve mastery of that learning or to get directions or to have a check-in meeting, that again, it's set for a time that again, can have that attention span of students.
We're talking with Janice Mertes, who is Assistant Director of Teaching and Learning with the Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction, DPI. We're looking at the virtual classroom rollout in our state and how it's working with your experiences as well. How is your child's school district gone into virtual this fall? How well is your child adjusting to the switch to virtual learning or a hybrid of the two or 100%? Is managing your child's virtual learning schedule stress stressor in your home. Join in at 800-642-1234. Janice, let's look at attendance and how attendance is taken. DPI had recommendations and plans for how to manage different aspects of virtual learning, such as trying to figure out whether the student is really there. How is attendance handled in the virtual setup?
Sure. So attendance is local control policy as far as the how they do it. We've provided some recommendations in collaboration with our Wisconsin Digital Learning Collaborative as far as what those check-ins online may look like. It could be driven by digital tool data. It could be, you know, some type of daily form. It could be some type of meeting that's a social emotional check. So we still have hours and minutes requirements for districts. So as they plan their schedule, they also have to account for attendance making. So we've seen a lot of districts just add on the how they're going to do attendance to their local policies and communicate that clearly to students and families, as well make sure that they have adults that can follow up and account for if there are situations, you know, what that would look like. You can still call in sick in a virtual environment. So, you know, there's some things that just look a little bit different, but yet the check-in, the emotional, social-emotional learning components to make sure students are safe are all built in by local districts. And we've given them some suggestions on what that can look like, but again, they're going to adapt it and communicate those local requirements to families and students.
You know, teachers have a wide range of knowledge and skill ability in the virtual setup here. What professional development is being done now to help teachers who are struggling in this environment?
Yeah, so one of the things, you know, going to last spring is, you know, that there wasn't a lot of time to prepare. We know as we look at districts who have created their plans, you know, where the professional development and lesson design time and tool training occurred for districts. We see this as ongoing this year as districts may adapt to intermittent breaks or rolling disruptions in their schedule. But a lot of districts have, you know, taken really high priority on building in professional development and collaboration time. That again, teachers may work with other teachers, get support in some of those trainings. We also, through the state, have a variety of resources available to districts that they're now taking advantage of as far as our support through this. But we see this, again, it's just the start of the year. We see this as a rolling process moving forward. And we know that educators' commitment and administrators' commitment to digital literacy training for professionals so they can guide students through this is of the highest priority. So work in progress, but again, as you mentioned at the top of the hour, amazing work by our educators and school districts to continue learning these best practices and moving forward in their delivery of instruction for students.
Does DPI have influence or insight into kids getting math books, workbooks, anything that involves pen and paper in these remote learning setups?
You know, we know that we often use the word analog, is that there's still paper and pencil. Because of the time that districts could prepare for this or, in fact, you know, start the year in some type of face-to-face, we know that there was a huge emphasis put on resource distribution. And even if districts were virtual, some type of resource pickup, you know, that could include, again, textbooks, regular books. You know, a lot of districts do have digital options of all those resources as well. But again, as they continue to go through these different stages and phases, you know, we know that that's a high priority, especially, you know, if students are lacking, you know, internet access. So the digital is an issue that, you know, districts are accommodating that. We also know just by age appropriate instruction that a variety of districts have organized, you know, materials drop off.
And we have to pause there with Janice Mertes with DPI as we look at remote learning. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network. We're discussing virtual learning and what we should know at this point as thousands of kids in Wisconsin are in the class, at home, maybe logging on right now. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. I'm living this world with a new middle schooler, with younger kids in elementary school. And we tried to transform our basement into a classroom and found in the first week that the kids were too distracting to one another. So we broke up the class. We're learning in fits and starts and trying to keep a massive whiteboard schedule of who is on Zoom when. It is a lot. And your experiences, your questions for DPI, Department of Public Instruction, they're welcome at 800-642-1234. Janice Mertes is Assistant Director of Teaching and Learning at DPI. She's our guide. So Janice, you know, how important is it for a child to have someone sitting next to them as the teacher is facilitating a class for 3 hours at a time or more and trying to get this learning going?
I think that the first, you know, credit to districts is the level of family engagement around this as far as informing parents of the schedules and trying to also support them in home technology use. So, you know, we're about 3 weeks into the school year here. We feel like districts are kind of they worked out kind of the wrinkles in the first couple weeks here, whether it was face-to-face or virtual. The biggest thing with parent engagement is, you know, I'm a parent of a senior in high school. I check her as much as probably my brother checks my nieces who are in kindergarten and second grade. So, but again, that variance in age-appropriate levels of contact. So just like we would expect, you know, parent engagement much more at the early grades, that's not going to change with these environments. And again, if we've got students face-to-face, there's a high level of, you know, parent engagement, things coming home. You know, now that we may have these asynchronous days or 100% virtual, you know, that's not changing the role of the parent, but we do expect that there probably is assistance needed for managing some of the technology. Although we are seeing, obviously, an increase of our digital literacy skills into the younger grades as they want to prove that they can do those things as well. But just, you know, the teacher communication, I think, has been outstanding. As we hear from districts implementing different pathways of communication, trying to make it easy to access information for parents, you know, newsletters, communications through their SIS system. So we know that districts place high priority on that, and we also feel that, you know, as parents know their own children, you know, they are going to help as needed just to be that guide on the side or to be the parent. They're always, you know, always being the parent, just checking in, following up, monitoring grades, you know, that type of thing. So variance in families. We also know that there are caregivers or community locations where individuals are taking on those roles during the instructional time as well. But again, getting all the information, the training and support, and then probably communicating to the parents as well. So it's all hands on deck, but we also know, again, variance by grade level and individual student needs, how parents and children are working out that level of support.
Janice Mertes is with us, Assistant Director of Teaching and Learning with the Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction. We're looking at the rollout of remote learning across Wisconsin. What we've learned so far during the pandemic, is it difficult for you to keep track of your own working from home schedule while also juggling virtual learning for your child? Does your child love the setup from home? What tips or tricks have you learned for managing your child's academic workload at home? We're at 800-642-1234. We heard from Ruth, who called in from Milwaukee, and Ruth says a first-generation immigrant family that Ruth knows is really struggling with virtual learning. The parents are not fluent in English, and the older high school kids are helping their younger elementary school students get by. Ruth is concerned for the learning of the little kids and families in these situations. Janice, can you help us with that?
Sure. You know, the biggest thing is districts know their students and families, and, you know, communicating back to districts those needs of students and taking into account an equitable access of education is crucial. You know, we encourage that, you know, that districts, you know, identify and help support individual students and families when they know of those needs, and how they, you know, build in extra supports, just like if the students were in school. So again, that communication flow and system is vital, and districts being able to help identify when those issues are of need is vital. So, you know, we encourage that two-way communication, and also, again, the supports that districts normally would have in face-to-face, how do they accelerate and even adapt those to help support students in the home in that capacity.
I wonder, has DPI looked at breaking down these classes into much smaller groups and maybe having shorter times for instruction per child? Because when you're having a whole class of 25 first graders in one Zoom, that is a prescription for chaos.
Yes. So we don't devise the local schedule, or like we call cohorting models. We have seen evidence in various districts where they, again, have done exactly that. They've broken students down into smaller groups, or especially for early learners, are setting up small group instruction time to not only help break up the screen time, but as you say, have a better handle on individual performance. We also know and have heard that some districts have done, you know, one-on-one sessions with the family and the child, again, to assess and make sure that they can reinforce and offer any extra support. So it's hard for us. We don't dictate that to districts, but we do know, as evidenced by districts, that they are looking at these variants. We also know that a great practice is offering virtual office hours or open conferring time, and offering maybe different hours of the day where families and students can contact their instructors. So it's hard to say that's not being done across the state, but we don't dictate that into local plans and schedules.
So here we are. We've been in this situation since March, and, you know, students and districts and teachers have been, you know, in this situation of working on this virtual environment, fine-tuning it. How has DPI been involved in this process of making it a better, more productive space for kids of all ages to learn? I mean, have we moved the needle at all since March?
I think the biggest thing is the preparation time. And we kind of, you know, we went to a point of putting everyone in a virtual environment by the nature of the pandemic and the unknown. You know, districts, we know that districts have reflected on that. We know that there was a lot of use of surveys, both of learners, parents, educators, to help identify areas of need, but areas of success. We know that there was a huge increase of training in those digital tools, and also understanding who kids were as learners, in the sense of, you know, what was that home environment like for them? How are they, you know, achieving during these times? So again, thinking about the fact that we did have a majority of our schools start in some capacity of face-to-face and really want to continue, you know, that does give us a little bit of return of normalcy as far as those relationship building, the, you know, having the time to train and communicate if we're going to go virtual for smaller amounts of time. Again, we do have some parents and children that selected 100% online. So their experience may be looking very different at this point because of that 100% virtual. Our districts that are starting 100% virtual, lessons learned, we know that, you know, they wanted to capture those back to school, you know, positive interactions, introductions. So how they built in those activities, virtual open houses, you know, kudos to our districts for really stepping up and learning those best practices, but also being very creative in what that looks like. So, you know, it's a work in progress, just like across the nation, we're hearing different things. But, you know, as our districts continue to analyze the situation and figure out what's the safest option for their families and students, we know that they are also very agile to pivot to varied options. But again, having gotten off to a better start and being able to implement some of these communication practices, We feel huge steps have been taken since spring.
Janice, what were the survey results? What did parents tell you? And do those survey results have any weight?
Sure. And then surveys were typically used more at the local level. As far as, you know, maybe difficulties at home with, you know, with technology or frustrations of their children. You know, we also heard that parents sensed there was a high level of family engagement during this time. They knew what kids were supposed to learn, how they were going to learn it. You know, as districts go into this fall, we know that they'll continue to look at those feedback tools to help guide. We also know that, you know, districts are making sure parents know how to get in communication with their teachers, you know, how to step in early in situations so it's not going to accelerate into longer issues, as well just the variance and, you know, attendance as far as, you know, what practices are going to look like, grading practices. You know, reestablishing the norms of learning this fall has been really important for families to get back to normal.
Janice, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Janice Murtis is Assistant Director of Teaching and Learning at DPI, Department of Public Instruction. We are continuing our conversation on virtual learning with an educator from a nonprofit school system in Michigan. That's after a news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're discussing the challenges and opportunities of virtual learning amid the pandemic. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. The thing that's hard for me as a parent is I don't know. I don't know how long we'll be in this virtual learning world. And then there is that guilt, the feeling that you're shortchanging your child, not providing enough attention to their skill development each day and helping them in places where you know the virtual classroom is coming up short. So it's really complicated. Do your kids love online learning now, or are they turned off by it? Is your child paying attention during these online Zooms? Do you stay seated next to them in order to keep them on task and involved in this virtual classroom, or are you able to walk away and allow them to do virtual class on their own? It's 800-642-1234. Shannon Smith is Director of Student Learning Services at Michigan Virtual. It's a nonprofit online school system founded more than two decades ago. Shannon, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me.
So what are some of the initial hurdles families and parents face as we're making this transition to virtual learning due to the pandemic?
I think you outlined many of them in your introduction really well. This is a new environment that we are all adjusting to, even those of us who have been in the virtual learning environment for decades. This is a different time, a different way of learning. We're working with students that weren't expecting to be online, and you know, maybe it's not where they're most comfortable, but this is the situation that we find ourselves in.
So can you give us any guidance, anything to help us establish a routine and stick to a routine and keep our energy into this? Because there are so many details every single day as parents that we have to check off on our checklist to make sure our child stays progressing and learning.
Absolutely. And I think the key word there is routine, and whatever as a parent you can do to make the situation as consistent as possible for your child and for yourself. You building out a schedule and helping your student to understand what they need to be doing at what time. And that requires communication with the teacher. I highly recommend that parents introduce themselves, share with the teacher their level of involvement, whether that's, you know, you're a stay-at-home parent who has that opportunity to sit with your child, or if you are a working parent, which is very commonly the situation, let the teacher know what your situation is, and that helps them better prepare and provide support for your child.
And you're also in a situation where many children are being sent to centers with their Chromebooks under their arm because parents are working outside the home. So there are those situations as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. And again, as much as we can share with teachers so that they're aware, they can plan and include some of that information in their lesson planning. I was speaking with your producer earlier this week, and we were discussing a lab that his son had to perform at home using household items, which is awesome and so creative and innovative for the teacher to be asking of the student, to engage the student. But at the same time, as a parent, it's helpful to know what your child is going to need before they're asking you in the middle of your meeting for pepper and soap. And so having that open line of communication, asking the parent or asking the teacher to let you know as a parent some of the things that they should be preparing for that week is going to help both your child, yourself, and the teacher prepare.
We're talking with Shannon Smith, who's Director of Student Learning Services at Michigan Virtual. It's a nonprofit online school system where she's been an educator and administrator for more than a decade. And we're taking your calls and your experiences in the virtual classroom learning that is amid the pandemic for so many households at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Margaret, who is joining us from Central Wisconsin. Hi, Margaret. What's your situation?
Good morning. I just wanted to alert your listeners to the fact that there are school districts in Wisconsin that have been leading the way in virtual learning for at least 10, maybe 10 to 15 years. For example, the Merrill Area School District in Merrill, Wisconsin has had virtual learning as components 6-12, and in particular 9-12, where the syllabus for the class is put out there. The lecture is put into a learning module, videos of the lecture, test questions, notes that students should have, face-to-face and online in the way of seminars. So for some districts, this is not new business.
Margaret.
And I just wanted, yes?
Yes, Margaret, thank you so much. And I'm wondering, how have you seen Merrill then do this transition and be able to offer the remote learning?
Well, when Merrill started, there was a culture in that district of very progressive thinking. And the district realized that that was the way learning was going. And they did not want to send their high schoolers off to college in a world where more online expectations would be available to them. So the district, being forward-thinking, just got themselves together and said, what are we going to do about this phenomenon that we're looking at, and started to move forward. And at the time, Wisconsin Virtual School, the K-12 virtual school, which is a free virtual school to Wisconsin residents, they were growing by leaps and bounds. So there was some cross-pollination. But I would say in particular, once the students got used to it and seeing what they needed to do for their classes online in learning modules and then going back and forth between face-to-face and online, the kids did very well.
So
did extraordinarily well.
The students took to it and the teachers got used to it as well. Shannon, I want you to jump in here. This is a district where the culture of online learning started long before this pandemic.
Absolutely. And I'm familiar with Wisconsin virtual schools. So we're part of a virtual learning leadership alliance group, the VLLA. And we are a group of virtual entities across the nation that work together to collaborate in the virtual environment of learning. So I'm thrilled that you have a caller who has mentioned them.
So just because a school district is virtual in the pandemic, how do you see the mix of both virtual learning and in-person or off-screen learning? Where do you see that mix?
Well, I as your caller mentioned, there's a difference between virtual environments that have been well established and And those schools who are trying to adjust and move their curriculum from a traditional setting to a virtual setting. So at Michigan Virtual, we are what you would call asynchronous, meaning that our students and our teachers are not online at the same time. Our content is developed and all of our assessments are included in our online platform, our LMS, or our learning management system. So students can move at their own pace, and they aren't on the screen doing Zoom meetings all day long, which is something that I think is very challenging for students. And unfortunately, we have a lot of schools that have moved from a traditional environment and are trying to mirror that experience in a virtual environment. They're different, and there's pedagogy that's different. The way that students learn is different in those two environments. And so there's some adjustments that everyone is learning to make, and schools are learning what the best process is for their students.
And so at Michigan Virtual, that means if you're all asynchronous, it means that students aren't having to log on at a certain time, like 8:30 in the morning, for a stretch of 3 hours of coursework.
Correct. Our students log on when it fits in their schedule, which we have found has been really productive in that so many families and parents are working online, or there's multiple students in the same household that are working online. So that flexibility allows them, to stretch the bandwidth. They don't have to worry about everyone being on Zoom calls at the same time and possibly dropping as a result of the bandwidth.
We have a call here from Carol in Kenosha, called in to ask you if you think this is where education is going in the future. Will education be forever changed post-COVID?
I do. I don't know that it's going to be exactly how it looks right now, but I do think that you're going to see much more virtual tools being used, virtual opportunities being utilized by schools. I think it's opening the doors to a lot of flexibility and some new ways of learning and providing educational opportunities to students that I believe is going to continue long after COVID.
One of the things about synchronous is that, you know, you're trying to do some relationship building in these virtual mm-hmm. classrooms, so students can learn, you know, find their friends in the little boxes mm-hmm. of images. You know, how do you build that in an asynchronous environment?
You utilize a lot of tools. One of the things that I've been doing in some of the classes that I'm teaching right now, because although I am an administrator right now, we have such a large student enrollment that I'm also teaching some classes until we can hire additional teachers. So I like to share some personal examples of what's happening in my life and allow students to share their examples. So I recently posted on what we call the teacher feed, which is kind of like an announcement board in my classroom. Think of it like a whiteboard or what I would look like if I was standing in front of my whiteboard.
And Shannon, we're going to pause on the teacher feed on that board here and be back here. Shannon Smith, Director of Student Learning Services at Michigan Virtual, back in a moment on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation about virtual learning that's underway in Wisconsin and many districts. How is school during the pandemic going for your family? Is the virtual space panning out? What workarounds have you made with your employer? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Shannon Smith is Director of Student Learning Services at Michigan Virtual, which is an online school system, and she's our guide. Shannon, where we left off, you were talking about the teacher feed and how you build relationships among students and the teacher, build connectedness in this virtual space. How do you do it?
Absolutely. So on teacher feed, I just recently posted a picture of my garden. I like to flower garden. So I shared a picture and I added the message to my students just saying, this is one of the things I like to do when I'm not on the computer? And what are the things that you like to do when you're not on the computer? Because I want to really engage students in, you know, the computer is not the only place to spend your time right now. And it's been really fun to see the answers that students are sharing. They are talking about walking their dog and jumping on their trampoline and, you know, just some of the other things that they are spending time on. And that allows us to engage in a conversation virtually that would be similar to what you might see in a traditional classroom, kind of talking to kids in the hallway or in between classes. And it can be a really powerful tool to build those relationships and build connections. And students can build connections. Oh, you have a trampoline? I have a trampoline too. And you see that kind of engagement in that.
Oh, because
that
they're,
environment as well.
They're uploading little messages or responses yep. to what their fellow students are posting.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I still see the drawback in that, you know, one student in real time is not talking with the other student and not being able mm-hmm. to connect with them in that real time space or even connect with their teacher. And I know that my own kids have really hungered for wanting to have more of a special connection with their teacher. And through that screen, it's just not happening.
It's definitely a challenge. And that is where I would say some of that synchronous time where students and teachers are more either small group or one-on-one or even the whole class can be really powerful. Our teachers, although they're asynchronous, they are required to have office hours. And that is a time where students can come to their Zoom room. And yeah, you're absolutely correct. There is a proximity a lack of proximity and that physical kind of connection. But you try to bridge that gap as best you can in under the circumstances.
You know, I think even the platforms that are being used are pretty tricky for even savvy parents who are tech savvy. I know, you know, we made an emergency run to Target for stylus pens because we found our children's fingers, they were having so much trouble drawing on their screens and not the dexterity wasn't there. And so they got frustrated and walked away. So we ran and got stylus pens. But, you know, not every family is in that situation to do that. So how do you work through those barriers?
I think that those are some of the challenges that we face. And, you know, that is, you know, being able to have a stylus pen is kind of a luxury for some families. Some families struggle with just having the technology. And so I think that schools are working really hard to try to get that technology to their students and trying to help make things come to life for the kids. I know a lot of, particularly when you're working with younger kids, utilizing, still using some of that handwriting practice and being able to send pictures to the teacher rather than trying to upload in some other format or scan. But a lot of schools are using, and we at Michigan Virtual use that technology as well, because kids are really comfortable on their phones. Even the little ones are comfortable on their parents' phones and can take pictures and things like that. And so having that available can be helpful to bridge that gap.
What do you think about workbooks and math books and books in the physical sense with, you know, pencil and paper and filling out worksheets in this virtual learning environment?
I think it's a great way to keep practicing and definitely for younger kids, you need that practice and regular interaction with numbers and with letters and building those skills so that they're not just using letters on a keyboard. That's not helping them learn how to write. So you definitely need those practice opportunities.
Shannon Smith is Director of Student Learning Services at Michigan Virtual, and she's been an educator and administrator in the online space for more than a decade. Let's bring in Jennifer now, joining us from Appleton. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
So we have two, I have five children. Our oldest is a high schooler, and he's in the virtual schools with the public schools this year, coming from 3 years of being homeschooled. And then my next two are homeschooled. One of them we pulled out of the public schools because of the plan for this fall. And then I have two younger first graders who are both special needs, and they need sign language interpreting. So they are doing some of their virtual schooling in the school building, in an empty classroom with their interpreter, and then some of it here at home with me helping with their virtual school.
How is it going?
It's slowly getting better. it's a full-time job, that's for sure. Especially with our three younger ones. And I go to school to eat lunch with my first graders when they are in the building to give their teachers a break. So is that there is that time when I do have to leave the house and leave my other kids to figure some things out while I'm at the school building. My high schooler actually yesterday he was supposed to do the PACER test for his gym class, and couldn't figure out how to do it with the various technology issues and trying to do the PACER outside on the sidewalk. And so this morning his teacher changed the assignment. And so just there's issues.
So you're
to get
right. It just seems like you're dodging and weaving and trying to just get past each different day with the different challenges. Shannon, what would you say there about Jennifer's situation and having kids at all levels and with, with special needs as well?
I first would say, Jennifer, you're doing an amazing job. And I would say that to a lot of parents. And, you know, we're all learning this new environment together, even those of us who have been online for years. There's a different feeling, it's a different environment because we're facing some very uncertain times. But I would say what you're doing, Jennifer, is amazing to support your students at all those different levels. It is definitely a challenge to have students with special needs and making sure that their needs are met. So I'm really thrilled to hear that your school is providing the services that you need through the interpreters and that you're able to go and visit during lunch. But I agree, there's going to be some, as you said, dodging and weaving as we figure out some of the challenges and work through them. I think we all need to be able to give each other and ourselves a lot of grace through this process. And as we're building these routines, it does take time.
How much time? Because it is really stressful.
I would say, you know, just as having been a traditional face-to-face teacher, it takes between 2 to 3 weeks to establish routines in your classroom. Mm-hmm. Every year when you have new students. And so I wouldn't be surprised if that's your similar situation as we work through this in these new environments.
Shannon, thank you for joining us.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Shannon Smith is Director of Student Learning Services at Michigan Virtual. It's an online school system founded in 1998. And earlier we spoke with Janice Mertes, who is Assistant Director of Teaching and Learning with the Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction. Just ahead, COVID-19 quarantines and lockdowns are keeping Americans inside for the most part. Crime across the country is falling, but shootings and killings are on the rise. What effect is the pandemic having on crime? 1A asks that question next. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.